This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, this one, the words I don't know. It really, like, I would sing for you, as I always do, but this one, the words, I just don't get it. But it's by DJ Tira and DJ Maphorisa. What's it called again, Palisa?
Midnight Staring.
If that makes any sense to you, then there you go. We start off, we kick the day off with Midnight Staring today. Sanbonani, welcome to the show this morning. This is Rory on Frankly Speaking. I'm flying solo today. My buddy, my pal, Andrew Levy, is out of town. So I have the studio all to myself, and as always, when Andrew's away, I can misbehave. No white monopoly capital to yank my chain. So this week has been quite an interesting week in South Africa. We had the Black Monday March that happened on Monday, the 31st of October, or was it the 30th of October? What we saw there was, at least the way it was initially billed, was that it was going to be a march in protest of farm murders, creating awareness about farm murders. But it seems like the dominating narrative from the march became about racism in South Africa and the flying of old flags and that sort of thing. And I must say, to be honest, I was really hurt by it. I was deeply, deeply hurt by what I saw. You know, it's every time you think we are headed somewhere, it takes something like this to take us all the way back. And you know, in the fashion of our show, we thought, you know what, let's confront this issue. Thankfully, I have friends all over the place, and I happen to have a friend who is not just a farmer, not just a white farmer, not just a white Afrikaans farmer, but also a farmer who supported Black Monday. I still call him friend. So I thought maybe I need to try and understand this from the perspective of a farmer. Help us understand what's going on. So when you speak about fear, what fear are you speaking about? When things like Black Monday happen, what does that mean? And what does that mean for the future of our country? So I am very, very happy to have Johan Abre here. Johan is a farmer in Limpopo. I met Johan many, many years ago in my past life, we've been catching up and cracking jokes about how I really didn't trust him at the beginning. Turns out he's a very harmless kind of guy, but he's a guy that I'd like to have a very good conversation about today. And if you have any questions, if you want to join in on the conversation, please tweet us at Rory Shabalala on Twitter. You can also send us your comments on our WhatsApp line, 079-748-2090, 079-748-2090. Let's get into this conversation. It's a highly divisive topic, but the question, frankly speaking, Black Monday and farm murders, what is going on? Johan, good morning.
Rory, good morning, and it's very, very nice to be here with you and to see you after such a long time again, and thanks for the invitation.
Too long. Thank you so much. Johan actually drove all the way from Limpopo just to have this conversation, so really, really appreciate it, Johan. Johan, let's get into it. Farm murders, I think, from a person who doesn't live on a farm and doesn't really farm. I do farm a bit, but I don't really farm. Help us understand, what are the facts and what are the myths about farm murders in South Africa?
Every day in South Africa, 52 or 55 people are getting killed. Mm. There's nothing special about a farm murder. A murder on a farmer is similar to a murder on somebody in Soshanguve or in the Cape Flats. But the per capita attacks and the spike of attacks that we have noticed on farmers in the past fortnight is something that led to this sort of a popular action that took place on Monday, which became known as Black Monday.
Mm.
I think it was Tuesday last week. There was the friend of the farmer at Klapmuts in the Western Cape that was murdered. He was sitting in the fields in his bakkie and doing a selfie video, and this thing went viral. And it was just this one ordinary video that actually sparked this entire thing, and everybody came on board. And what was supposed to be a very harmless and the protest with very good intentions, unfortunately got spoiled by a few people that have not realized that we have moved on in life. The entire exercise was derailed by a few people, unfortunately, in some places a little bit more than others. The one we attended in Limpopo, I must say, was nothing of the likes that we have read elsewhere in the media. I was still at this protest on the N1 in Limpopo when I saw a Facebook post by the mayor of Midval, Bongani Baloyi, where he was just receiving the memorandum and where he reported that the exercise day in Midval turned into people coming out with all sorts of apartheid paraphernalia and totally upset the apple cart, and the attention goes away from the entire episode. But yeah, here we are, and we will always have people that are spoiling these type of things. For us, it's a farm attacks. Yesterday, by the way, there was the day
three?
After Black Monday, there was three farm attacks.
Yeah,
the one yesterday afternoon on a black farmer in the Northern Cape. We don't look at this. Personally, we and some of our friends in agricultural organizations, we don't look at this, whether it's an attack on a white farmer or a black farmer. It's an attack on an agriculturist, somebody who's working the land, somebody who's producing food. But because of the things of the past, it just so happened that the majority of farmers are often white.
Yeah.
But we have seen that it's not there's a farmer, a black farmer and his wife in the Northern Cape that got in the Northwest that got killed a while back. I don't think we should make this thing a race issue at all.
Yeah, but it's become a race issue, and I want to get into the race issue in a bit. I genuinely, because I'm coming into this conversation as someone that, as I say, I was hurt by it, I was upset by it, and actually, what empathy I might have had for the farming community before Black Monday was certainly reduced as a result of what I saw. Not just those that took the flags, but also those that allowed it to happen in their presence and did nothing about it. I genuinely want to understand the perspective of farmers. You speak about the per capita spike in attacks and murders. You said in the past fortnight. Can you just explain how big was the spike and you know, what sparked it? Do you know?
I don't think there's anything particular that spiked it. Whether people have decided this week we are not going to kill in the cities, we are going to kill on the farms. It is just something that it is a spontaneous thing. We can't really explain why. What we have seen is a lot of these farm attacks takes place in Limpopo in the Northwest. The attacks that took place in the Western Cape seems to have sparked this whole thing. There was one or two attacks there. There was one or two in Limpopo again. And it was just the mere numbers that in the last 2 weeks that I think people talk about 12 attacks, four or five people get killed in a matter of 5 or 6 days. I'm not AfriForum will be able to give you all the stats and those guys that are making it their business to study these facts and figures. But I think this one particular incident, as I said, in the Western Cape brought this whole thing to the fore, and we went there with sober intentions to go and to stand next to the road for a few minutes to protest, get back in our buckets and go back to our cows. Unfortunately,
before we get into the unfortunate part, I want us to have a specific conversation around Black Monday. But take us into the farming community. You live in a farming community. You're a farmer. You probably have WhatsApp groups. I don't know how farmers communicate. What is the feeling around farm murders? How do farmers literally feel? Is it a feeling of fear? Is it a feeling of anger? What's going on in the minds and the hearts of farmers around this issue of farm attacks and farm murders?
Rory, when you're on a farm, you've in the morning you leave the house, you go to the feed lot, then you go to the to the crops, then you go to the dams to check on this, check on that. You are moving all over the farm everywhere. It's no different to people in the cities. And I think there's also, you can also get your head knocked in Rivonia Road, as what you can get your head knocked in on your farm wherever you are. But I must say that the farmers have really started to organize themselves quite significantly. Without going into too much detail, because there's always these security issues, but there are these WhatsApp groups, there are radio groups, people moving with handheld radios, radios in their buckies, so that people can get in touch with each other. If there is a problem, they call and so on. For example, where we are, in our particular area, every morning at 6 o'clock, somebody call you on the radio. If you don't respond to the radio call, they send you a WhatsApp. If you did not read the WhatsApp in 2 minutes, they call you.
All right.
If you do not pick up the telephone, then there's 20 buckets at your gate in 5 minutes.
Immediately, yeah.
So it's very, very well organized.
So if you happen to be taking a dump and now you've got 20 buckets at your gate, everybody's going to be upset at you.
People are going to be very angry. And so that's if you're busy with a braai or doing something else and you did not respond to that, you're in serious trouble. So yeah, the farmers are trying to organize themselves a little bit better, and there are these WhatsApp groups, but people live in fear, you know. Every night when I go to bed, and by the way, my mother is in her mid-70s. She does not want to leave her farm. My father has been passed for a few years. She still wants to live on a farm. A woman by herself living on a farm, it is a really scary thought.
Yeah.
The procedures for me to go to bed at night takes me 15 to 20 minutes.
And those are just security procedures?
It's all security related. Check on the gates, check on the fences, check on the camera systems, this, that, and the other, lock the gates inside the house, switching this on and that off and whatever. So it is I don't think it's totally dissimilar. People in the cities are living in similar conditions. But
it's your reality, right?
It's our reality.
Irrespective of what anyone else is experiencing, that's your reality. Do you think that this is a general part of the crime in the country, or do you think farms are specifically being targeted? Do you think there's like a farm attack syndicate or syndicates in operation?
That is a very touchy issue. Because where I come from, there are a lot of farmers that believe that these attacks that are happening are some sort of white genocide and so on. I am yet to see evidence of that. I truly don't believe that there is a group of Africans that have now decided that they should now take out the white population and kill them left, right, and center on their farms. I truly have not seen any evidence. I do not discard that there's a possibility that here and there might be an element to that extent, but I don't think there is centrally organized at all. I think it is greed, it is people that are after guns, it is people that are after money. It is pure, most of the times, it is simple robberies. But yesterday we saw in Vogel, that was a strange one. It was people approaching a farmer and his farm worker fixing a fence. The people came up to them. They were asking for water. The farm worker was organizing the water, and the next moment they shot the farmer, and they left. But luckily, the guys got caught and so on. So sometimes it's strange that they just move in. In Lepalale, about 6 weeks ago, we had there's a medical doctor who is also a part-time farmer. He was busy in the evening about 8 o'clock on the stoop with his farm workers. And the guys came to them, and they simply just walk up to him, they shot him, and they ran away. So then you're asking yourself, but what's the purpose of that?
Yeah.
This is a medical doctor. He is serving the community. This particular medical doctor was somebody that actually went out of his way to help families in particular need. That is a major loss. It is a gap that would never be able to be filled in that part of the world again.
Help me just understand this idea. You say that in some of the circles or the farming communities, there is talk of white genocide. When this discussion is being had, what is the thinking around the genocide? What's going on? What are some of the conspiracy theories surrounding this white genocide?
I think I personally think a lot of people are just listening too much to BLF and all the war talk of Andile Mkhitama and his friends, and they are taking a lot of these things a little bit too serious and too personal. But there is talk of they want to get white farmers off their farms completely, and they want to take the land, and they want to make sure that people, the settlers, are sent back to where they come from, and that is the type of discussions that there are. But as I said, we have not, and, and there truly is not. I would make myself very unpopular in some of these groups if we express these type of views, because it is some people are expecting from us to believe this.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, if I haven't seen enough proof and evidence of that, I can't sustain an argument of that nature.
Well, UNISA criminologist Anthony Minar said farmers were attacked because they were soft targets. It's because they're isolated and are seen to have weapons and money. That's the primary reason that researchers are coming up with. It's not so much a white genocide thing. To what extent then are farm murders a new phenomenon, or have they just always been part of? It's just that we're becoming more aware of them. So if they are a recent phenomenon, then we might be able to say, okay, we see that since the EFF came to life or the BLF came to life, there's been a spike. But if they've always been there, then it might just be part of the social fabric, an unfortunate one, but the part of the social fabric. To what extent are they a new phenomenon?
Rory, I think, like with so many other things, the fact that a lot more people became aware of farm attacks and farm murders is as a result of the incredible power of social media. Mm. A lot of these messages are carried extremely fast on Facebook and Twitter and WhatsApp and so on. And I just think that more people talk more about it. Farm murders have always been there. There is most certainly a spike. There is, I think there's more attacks this year so far than there was in, I think, the entire of last year. Mm. So there's certainly an increase in farm attacks and farm murders, and people are starting to talk more about it. But I can't really put my hand on the reason to say, apart from the fact that it's a soft target, and apart from the fact that farmers often do carry firearms for the sport of hunting or for self-protection of that type of things. Mm. People know that, and it really, to me, it seems that people are after those guns
yeah.
And they are after cash. Mm. But these days, I mean, in the fields, you know, in Groblersdal and the areas where guys are selling huge quantities of oranges to the hawkers and so, there's no cash even changing hands there anymore. Mm. If you are a hawker and you live in Polokwane and you want to buy oranges in Groblersdal, you go with your bucky to the farm, they load it, they swipe the cart in the fields, you take your stuff and you leave.
Right.
So
it's no longer even just a cash thing.
It's not. People are really moving away from having cash because they know that is one of the big things that people are after.
Well, according to Africa Check, there has been a 290% increase in farm attacks from 2010 to 2016, while the murders have remained steady at between 58 to 64. So one does get the sense that there is cause for panic within the farming community, because you're seeing all of these attacks. Yes, it's not translating into a lot of murders or an increase in murders, but there is this sense of worry because you're seeing an increase in farm attacks. Now, then, what has changed? What's your sense about what is it that has driven the increase in farm attacks? So farms were always there. They were always soft targets. Farmers always had guns. They even had cash back then. They don't even carry cash anymore. But we're seeing more attacks happening. Do you think that there is the politics of the current environment are impacting this increase in farm attacks?
I think it might be a small contributing factor, but I have not, and I think it's dangerous to talk about. Unfortunately, politicians are often responsible for people to get onto the bandwagon. And
you're not saying this lightly because you've been in politics, so it's not like you're just saying this. You know politics a little bit more intimately.
No, absolutely. Mm. And from the far left to the far right, people are trying to make this thing political, and it is not supposed to be. It is truly not supposed to be political, mm. Because I'm quite sure that there are one of the murders that took place yesterday, it was a labor dispute. It does happen that people feel that they have been done in, that they've been paid short, or whatever the case, or the conditions of the particular incident could be. There are cases like those as well, where people come back, it's a revenge attack. But by far, and as your researchers have said, and the ones you have quoted there, it is certainly most often a case of people are after, when they have a firearm. Hmm. Because when somebody point you in the face, and I have been pointed with a firearm in an attack, it is truly something. It sends shivers down your spine. You feel absolutely powerless. It is now you want to do just what the people want you to do, and you want them to leave. Mm. And you want them to leave you in one piece with your head still screwed onto your neck.
How did you come out of that alive? Just tell us about your incident.
Mine was luckily, it's a number of years ago. We were operating a factory on a farm, by the way, in the same area where the trouble was with in Midvale earlier this week. Mm. And I woke up in the morning and I saw the factory workers were walking towards the factory, but they were not coming. You know, they go in the morning, they put their bags down and they move about a little bit, and they did not come out of the factory again. Mm. And at some point, I went down to go and investigate what's going on. And as I moved in, they pointed me with the gun, and they already caught every single person. 38 of them, they caught them, they tied them up with their shoelaces, and they throwed them.
How many people is this?
30. It was four attackers.
Four attackers have managed to tie up 38 people.
Yeah. They put them in one of the storage facilities that we were there, and then they were obviously waiting for me because it was payday, and it was before we were moved over to bank, paying people into their bank accounts. There was still a lot of cash, and they took me by they took me up to the house, because the house and the factory was about 250 meters. Took me into the house, and they started roughing me up a little bit. They forced me to open the safe, which I've done. I gave them. I just came back from a trip to this, from Southeast Asia. So I bought a lot of jewelry pieces, and because it was a factory where we worked with semi precious and ornamental stones. Mm. And then I took all those. They took firearms, every firearm that they had. One of the firearms was actually a piece that's been inherited in the family through generations. And then of course all the cash, and they tied me up, and they left with the bucky and everything that they could load on it.
Wow. And how do you, I mean, I see, I'm not sure if you're tearing up, but how do you move on from that without feeling like, I mean, what does the next day, the day after, feel like? How do you deal with this trauma? Because I imagine this is, what we're seeing are also just symptoms of trauma, right, that are happening in the farming community, and people are now acting up. Mm. What does the next day look like? Mm. Or even the next 5 minutes after that, who do you trust?
Well, initially, you go through a short thing of a six. Or my experience was, for the rest of that day, I was angry. Mm. I was angry because my employees, male and female, had to endure that treatment at the hands of thugs, because they are nothing else but thugs. Mm. And but then I had to think, but how are we going to get back at them to bring them to justice? In this particular incident, we have made little posters and flyers and distributed them and put them on some of the public spaces. And my employees have actually gathered the information, and the police arrested three of the four guys. Mm. Unfortunately, the sloppy work that is often done by the police, they are very, very good police officers, and some of them are doing an outstanding work. Mm. But we often find that the sloppy protection of the crime scene, and the poor quality of the evidence that is prepared for court cases in the event that they catch people, often lead to these people then just being released again, which was the case in with the attack that we had. Mm. So that's sad. But you go through anger, but then you just want justice, and you want justice for everybody that was affected. In this case, it was a lot of us.
So if you've just joined us, we're speaking to Johan Abri. He is a farmer. We're speaking about, frankly speaking, farm murders and Black Monday. We have some of your friends listening. We've got a friend of ours, Kaogelo. He says, we have failed as a country to secure confidence in and respect for the rule of law, hence the rise in violent crimes. So help us then understand, what is it? So when you have a Black Monday, when it was originally conceived, or the way that it arrived to you, what was its purpose? Who was it meant for? Who are you trying to get the attention of? And what's the message that Black Monday was trying to get the attention of?
Mm. A lot of the problem with this past Monday's Black Monday event was that there was no single organization that took responsibility for organizing it.
Mm.
It was a loose, spontaneous arrangement of everybody in every corner of the country. Farmers just organizing themselves, and they say, at this time we're going to be at that point.
How did they all decide that it was going to be Black Monday then? Or was that a coincidence? Or it must have come from somewhere, that we're going to dress in black, and this thing is going to be called Black Monday. So how does that then work with this loose arrangement of everyone?
I don't think they planned to call this thing Black Monday. I think Black Monday was something that the
given
media just
it, yeah, yeah.
that the media was giving to it. Mm. As I mentioned in earlier, it was as a result of that one farm attack at Klapmuts in the Western Cape, where the friend of this farmer went into his bucky, made this really emotional plea, and he said, "Guys, what can we do? What can we do to celebrate the lives of those farmers that have been murdered? Let us all wear black on Monday."
Oh, okay, so it came from there.
And
yeah.
it came from there.
Okay, so you speak about the police and so on. So what is it then that makes farm murders, and I think you touched on it earlier, deserve special attention? As you said, farm murders are just a fraction of the all the murders that happen in the country. Since 1990, a farmer has been murdered every 5 days, compared to 53 South Africans murdered every day over the same time frame. So when farmers are saying, you know, we need special focus on this, you know, they might not necessarily be suggesting that take attention from other things, but they're saying our case deserves special attention. What do you think it is that calls for the special attention?
I think the organized agriculture, Agri Limpopo, TAU SA, and those guys, one of the major concerns that they advance to justify more focus on farm attacks is the fear that we might at some point have a situation where the food security of the country might come under pressure. We have seen with the drought of last year, just the year before, the simple drought, the price of potatoes, what the price of potatoes have done, simply because a terrible drought in a particular part of the world where potatoes are produced. Now, we have all these supplementary factors like farm attacks and those type of things. The drop in commercial farmers is significant. I think in 1994 there was 80,000 commercial farmers. Today I think there are 30 or 35,000 commercial farmers. A lot of people actually just leave it. They just leave farming.
Mm. Others go into the rest of the continent and farm there.
Or the rest of
the world.
Mm. Absolutely. A lot of them are farming in Europe at the moment, in the former Eastern Bloc. South African farmers are extremely sought after commodities, if I can call it like that.
But help somebody that might not understand, because on social media you saw a lot of people saying, yeah, you can't tell us about food security as if we weren't providing for our own food before you arrived here. Speaking to the colonizing white farmer.
Yeah.
Explain to somebody that might not understand why it is significant that we're losing commercial farmers specifically, and why it's not simply a matter of, oh well, Rory can come and start farming when he's gone.
Rory, today worldwide, less than 100 farmers produce 80% of the carrots that are consumed worldwide. It really is true that I don't want to play too much with percentages and figures, but it's reasonably close to say that 20% of South African farmers are producing the food of 80% of the nation. Mm. That's reasonably close. I think clever guys like Professor Pete Krokamp and those have banded around similar figures before. So if you start taking out significant chunks of commercial farmers, guys that are specializing, you know, we look at the big, I mean, ZZ2 tomatoes, for example, in Moiketsi, in Limpopo. Those guys are the biggest producers of tomatoes in the southern hemisphere. They are employing 3,000 employees. They are planting tomatoes on 500 or 1,000 hectares, intensive in net housings. Mm. It is a specialized thing. I had an interesting discussion with one of those farmers before, when we talked about land and land reform and should I let go of my land, and if the government come and nationalize what. And this guy, who is I don't want to name him on air because I've not discussed it with him before, he said to me that I am the best producer of this crop in the world.
Mm.
And even if I don't have land to plant it on, even if I don't own the land that I plant it on, my expertise will always be necessary. People will always ask me to come and plant this particular crop because they know that I can do it. They know that I know how to fertilize it. They know that I out to produce beautiful fruit and to put them onto the market. So a lot of people, this, the skill is there, but how we are going to deal with this slow pace of land reform is certainly a very, very critical issue.
What were you surprised by the acts of racism that came? So you say you're upset by it, but were you surprised that the racists came out and joined this march?
I were not. Sadly, I were not. It is true that the South African farming community today still harbor a lot of racist farmers, because they are racist for reasons of their own.
Help us understand, why is that? Because I genuinely sat there and said, but what did black people just do to these people? What did, you know, it's not like black people went to Europe and colonized Europe, and now this is just revenge. It's not like black people instituted apartheid against white people. What is the reason that these, and I know it's not you, but you know, coming from these communities, what are the reasons they advance about why they harbor this racism against black people?
I think, you know, this is good. The study of these type of issues is a science in its own right. But I believe that a lot of farmers that are still exhibiting this racist behavior, I must also say to you that there's a huge, and I live with farmers, I work with them, I sit with them in meetings. There is a significant, if not by far the majority, chunk of farmers that have accepted their fate, that have accepted that we are living in a country that is different to the one that they came from, and that we have to find ways to take each other's hands. I think that the insecurities about land is possibly the biggest driving factor of making farmers to still be to get angry and to have to exhibit these racist behaviors. In terms of the exhibition or the waving of apartheid paraphernalia and those types of things, that to me is simply, it's downright wrong. It is wrong for Steve Hofmeyr to sing Die Stem and leave out Nkosi Sikelel Afrika. It is wrong for Mboweni Ndlozi to sing Nkosi Sikelel Afrika and leave out Die Stem. We are South Africans, we are patriots, we've got the national anthem, we should sing that. So I personally, I have, you know, a lot of people talk about the flying of the old flag during Black Monday and those type of things. We also know that there was a very unfortunate journalist here in Sandton who have tweeted some of these
fake
pictures
news.
Who are very old. The pictures that came from 2010. And I understand that this employer is taking him to task for that. Now, there's nothing wrong.
Name and shame him. Who is it?
Yeah, well, it was Nicholas Bauer of UNCA.
Nicholas Bauer is UNCA.
I've actually asked a question on my Facebook page. I said, what is the difference between what Nicholas have done and what Belt Pottinger have done? Because it is the distribution of fake news to drive racial tension between people that really do not need any more stir up. So, but this thing of the old apartheid symbols, you know. I'm really truly, and I'll be very unpopular in certain communities to say what I'm about to say, but I wonder whether it's not time for a test case to go through before the courts and declare these things unlawful. And if they catch you waving the old South African flag, they must arrest you. Because which other way are people going to learn that those symbols have caused so much pain to people in the past, and by continue doing it, because a lot of us are doing extremely hard work, we're investing a lot of our time to try to build bridges, to try to assist the emerging farmers that are coming to lift in between us where they have never been before, to assist them to make our equipment available, to teach them skills, to build bridges. And here come one fool and wave a flag and break down everything that we have tried and to put us back so many steps. So I think personally I have too much of my own work, and I'm looking after my own cows and my business. I'm not going to court, but maybe BLF or somebody must go to the court and try to declare these things lawful and see what the courts have to say about this and whether the constitutional court would support something.
Well, such steps have been taken in Germany as far as the Holocaust is concerned. Rwanda is an African example where you don't speak about what's happened between the Tutsis and the Hutus because it's caused so much. It might be your right, and it might be part of the history, but it causes so much damage to what we're trying to build and move forward that it's not worth it. It's just not worth it. I think I agree agree with you there. How do we then look at this issue? I think from a point of view of the responsibility that white farmers such as yourself have to speak out against these things within the farming community. You know, we know who stands up for the racists, right? It's Steve Hofmeyr. He's a clear voice. Who is the voice that is speaking out against Steve Hofmeyr from the farming community? Because if Rory speaks out against it, Rory's just the wrong skin color for anyone to, you know, yeah, it's because you're black, but if Johan does it, he's got credibility. He's a farmer himself. But we're not hearing enough Johan speak out against it, and that is why, even if they might be a minority, it sounds like the likes of Steve Hofmeyr represent the entire community. Where are the Johan Abris, and why aren't they louder?
It's a very good question. You know, there's also a lot of pressure in these communities. We understand. I believe that there are enough South African farmers that know that we have to adjust. We have to adopt. We have to look at ways that to work together in other ways. And there are people that are talking, that are speaking out, but they are not speaking out loudly enough. I know that in some of the organized agricultural organizations, there are a lot of voices going up about these type of things. The night before, Sunday night before this Black Monday thing, there was one guy, because it, the whole thing that becomes so fashionable now of this selfie videos, every second Tom, Dick and Harry now wants to make a selfie video and have an opinion about this. And you get all these things, hundreds of them, and what's. But there was this one particular guy with a big black beard that came up on Sunday night, and he pleaded to everybody, to every farmer that is going out tomorrow morning. He said, guys, leave these flags and things that you want to wave, leave them at home. Tomorrow we are going to the streets. We are going to say we are tired, we are fed up to being killed on our farms, and we do not want to politicize this thing. We do not want you to turn up there in your DA or Freedom Front or BLF, whatever the case may be, in your T-shirt of your political organization. We are united as a nation.
I'd love to see a farmer with a BLF.
Sorry, I slipped up on that one. But leave your stuff at home. And they were really, and he was really pleading with people not to go out the next day with those things. But unfortunately, these few a number of spoil sports have done it, and there goes the entire exercise up in smoke. Unfortunately, because of the behavior of these people.
But what action then does the farming community take against these people who are basically undermined? I mean, the big question I have is, you know, are there more or less people after Black Monday that actually empathize with farmers after what happened on Black Monday? If these people are doing such damage to the efforts of farmers to get their message out, what is the farming community doing? What are the likes of the Transvaal Agricultural Union, AgriSA, and so on? What are they doing and what are they saying? Because you're hearing nothing. I went onto the website of the Transvaal Agricultural Union. I went, you know, I don't know, I haven't checked AgriSA and so on, but where are the statements that say enough is enough, this will not be tolerated?
There is a hell of a lot of room for improvement on that score. I am afraid that not enough is being done. If we want our plight, if we want people in the cities, in the urban areas, to take the plight of rural communities serious, we have to stand up. We have to stand up more against the brutal abuse of symbols of the past that's causing so much hurt to people. But unfortunately, I am afraid that I think I saw yesterday AfriForum made a little bit of noise, and said, look, keep these things away, keep them in your house, don't bring me into the streets, because they are just causing too much damage to a cause that is actually supposed to be a very noble cause.
And why don't you just burn them, not even keep them in your house? What is it that you're holding on to? It's cheating on your partner and keeping the photo in your wallet, keeping the photo of the person you cheated with in the wallet. Why in the world, if you say to me, I'm sorry for the past, please forgive me, let's move on. But every now and then, when we've had a little fight, you go and you pull out this. What does it mean about how sorry you really are about what happened in the past?
Yeah.
So, you know, what can Johan do? Because I see Johan's Facebook messages, and there's constantly a report about what's happened on the farm. Who will take the baton and the banner and the flag for saying we as white farmers need to behave differently? Who is that, and who should it be?
It could be nobody different than every single individual farmer himself that needs to have a change of heart on these things. That needs to understand if they want the plight of farmers and the brutal murder and attacks on farmers to be taken seriously. They can't go out into the street and wave flags that are causing a lot of pain to other people, because they will absolutely get no sympathy. Individuals will have to stand up, and I am absolutely convinced that there are significant numbers of farmers that realize this and that are starting to do that. Unfortunately, there are because of the political issues we have discussed earlier, there are still a lot of people that have not come to that reality. But I think it is our duty, and we all try to calm down the tensions. We try to bring the temperature down in terms of these things, to talk people out of these type of things. But if you don't change from inside, if your heart doesn't change, it's going to be very difficult for any organization to change you.
Let's talk about the heart. I think the thing that fascinates me about all of this is that the Afrikaans community particularly is a community that is rooted in a lot of the Christian faith. How does it reconcile this type of behavior with this? And what do the Dwimanis on Sunday preach? Do they actually preach about this? I'm really confused by a community that says it holds on to the Christian faith, that speaks love and all of these things, that then either comes out with these things or condones them and just lets them happen around them. How do you... So again, in the pub when all of the farmers are talking and so on, how do they create that link? Just for somebody who just can't understand how this works.
Yeah. It is in the pubs and the church, you'll get two different stories. But
and the same people are in the pub and the church.
That's also true. On a more serious note, I think there is also a move in some of the religious communities to preach tolerance. But unfortunately, the moment you walk out of church, a lot of these farm attacks are happening on Sundays, by the way.
Why is that? Because the guys aren't on the
farm. They are not on the farm. It is easy to get access to the house and those type of things. There is certainly in the religious fraternity also some pressure to preach reconciliation. But when you get out of church and there is another attack, and then people get angry again, and they everything start. But when there is a quiet period, people calm down and they take out that if everything goes well. But the moment there is a farmer, and particularly when it is in close to you, we had one. When I stand on my balcony in the afternoons and I look over the river, and the house on the far side was attacked. I can see this house every morning when I wake up, every afternoon. I can see this particular house where the helper in the house went out. They tied her up. They tried to get access to the house, but luckily the old granny who lives in the house have seen them. They've called the son who was busy in the watermelons. They all came out, and the guys fled and on foot, and we were unable to catch them. But what we have also experienced is a lot, because there's a lot of game farms in our part of the world. A lot of these farmers are now making the helicopters available long before the police are there, or when the police come to the scene. There's already a helicopter in the air. The community policing forum have organized themselves. Agricultural unions are on the ground blocking the roads and so on. And then there's a quiet period again, and then things go well, and then there's the one attack, and everybody's angry.
And it all falls apart. Yeah. We've got a message here from Carla van Rensburg, and she says, government's land reform policy is failing South Africans, and it's part of the problem. What is it that government is expected to do, or the farming community wants government to do, or the police to do, to try and curb this thing? It always seems to me that the police always arrive a day late and a dollar short, in sense of a heist happens and they come afterwards. So this happens, so we're not in crime avoidance. We're ultimately in trying to solve crimes, and I don't know to what extent we're successful in prosecuting those crimes. But so what more, apart from having a police station around, answering the phone, arriving an hour later, what is it that is expected from the police and government as a whole?
Yeah. Now we are trending towards the politics of land again, which is a very difficult thing to explain. My major concern is I don't believe that this particular government of today is truly serious about land reform, because Rory, it is impossible. If I give you 500 hectares and I say yes, land, go farm. There's nothing you can do apart from sitting under the tree. If you don't have cash to operate that farm, it is absolutely impossible. And the one thing that I don't think government is serious about is to give transport to emerging farmers so that they can go to the bank and say, look, here is my farm, I want to buy a tractor, I want to plow, I want to set up a feedlot, I want to take winter calves to the slaughtering market. If you don't have cash, land means nothing. You cannot use, you can truly not utilize, you can't even buy seed, you can't buy fertilizing. So I'm concerned that government wants to nationalize land instead of actually giving people the opportunity to take that transport, to go to the bank and borrow money against it so that they can farm.
That doesn't matter what people do with the farm. Just the idea that I have land. I mean, land has become such a big topic these days, and people just say, look, first let's resolve getting the land back into the right hands, quote unquote. And then we can worry about how we're using it. Why does it matter what government eventually does with the land?
I think if we say get farms back into the right hands, we have to define that. The right hands, the hands which own land in South Africa today, is the government and the commercial banks. South African farmers are in debt to the teeth. That there is such a little bit of liquidity between what farmers own and what they own the banks. Farmers can't move if you don't. So who are the real owners? Who are the transport carriers of land in South Africa? It is government and it is the banks. So we must first decide how we are going to deal with that thing. If we say okay, if a policy of let's take land without compensation. What is the commercial banks going to say? Are they going to write off a few hundred billion in debt, and how are we going to manage that thing? So I think the whole thing is about ownership, and it is true, the pace of land reform is pathetic. We have seen this past Sunday in the papers, there's a little bit of the figures looks a little bit different to what we were told before. We were talking about 10%, now we see it's closer to 26%. So there is movement, but it is still too slow. But in the end, must land go to the government? Or must it go to the people? Yeah. And I believe land must be held by individual South African patriots who wants to work it and who wants to produce food.
Let's talk about the building of bridges. You've touched on that a little bit. As a starting point, do you think that white males, particularly in South Africa, have a responsibility to be mindful of the way that they carry themselves and their power? Sometimes it's not about hoisting the flag, right? Sometimes just the way you are can make black people feel unsafe in your presence, and that itself can be racism. Do you think that as a precondition to us building these bridges, that is an expectation primarily from white males? So because you see what happened, yes, it might have been a minority that flew the old flag and so on, but the attitude of the people that were coming out, statements like no boer, no pap, all of those are provocative. They might not be wrong in the sense, but they're very provocative in the way you come up, the way you speak, the way you... Do we have a responsibility to begin to change what the culture of being a white Afrikaner male, for example, what that looks like and shows up as within the country that we're in?
Every white South African male, particularly Afrikaans-speaking farmers, on top of that, do have a responsibility. I'm absolutely convinced about that we do have a responsibility, because it is that particular definition that we're the John Fosters and the P.W. Botha's and the Hendrik Verwoerds of the past that caused so much pain to so many people. So yes, I truly believe that particular definition, as you have outlined it, have a responsibility possibly bigger than many other white South Africans. And that is something that we need to take up. And that is something I would really like to see, that a lot more of these type of discussions happens in some of these meetings of agricultural organizations and in churches and in these rural discussion groups and policing community forums. Because what you often find is people now just want to stay inside the law. They believe we have seen this. I don't think one can totally separate these coffin thing with this debate. It is, it is in one way or the other, it is sort of intertwined. Okay, there's a lot of debate whether the case of attempted murder was really made out and whether the punishment was too hard. But I think it is, it, those boys, who on earth in his right mind catch somebody else and put him in a coffin, black or white?
Yeah.
It is stupid, it is foolish, it must be punished.
Yeah.
And there's no excuse for that, but these are the type of things that, that we need to start to happen. And as we have talked about earlier, look at the, to make out a case against these apartheid symbols and see what the law says, see what the courts have to say about that. But yes, you are quite right. If there is an onus and there is a huge responsibility on white farmers to also show that that from their side they want to take hands and they want to make things better for everybody.
As we close out, Johan, what are some of the interesting efforts that you've seen to build bridges between the farming communities and the let's say the black communities around them, and to deal with some of these issues around creating shared value and prosperity for everyone around? Are there some good case studies of good behavior? Because we're speaking here about a lot of bad behavior. Are there great case studies of good behavior that you can share with us?
I'm gonna use the example of land ownership. We find in our part of the world farmers that are new farmers, let's call them emerging farmers or black farmers or what have you, however you want to define them, who comes into our particular community with cash, buy land and farm, they are successful. In our particular area there's 37 of these land restitution farms, of which only a single one is still functioning. Not because the emerging farmer were wrong or whatever, but he were put on a farm without help,
without capital,
capital, without skills, without everything. I truly believe in our area we have a young girl there, Tato Mwahi. Tato she's a city girl, she's a Sandton girl. Her father got tired of the city, so he said, look, it's just an hour and a half. Some people sit in traffic anyway longer if I want to come. Let's just go and buy a farm. And Tato is now, she has established herself, she has established a training facility. She's getting funding from government. She was just rewarded the Limpopo Young Farmer of the Year. She just came from Brazil. She was in Israel the other day. And she and my brother got a fantastic relationship. If she wants to him to come and do a piece of work for her, he calls her. They've got they help each other. They go out of their way to try to assist each other. The one area where we often see people building bridges, and they build them very fast, is if there is a veld fire, because then you don't discriminate.
we need more veld fires.
Perhaps we need more veld fires to bring down the temperature.
What other cases are you seeing? Is this a widespread thing, and is it an organized thing, or is it just by a happy coincidence that you have your brother in the space, or are we seeing a more organized effort to build bridges?
I think what we need to see a lot more of is we need to make agriculture attractive to young people. By doing so, we're going to bring a lot of youngsters, because in our part of the world, the unemployment rate is more than 50%. By bringing in these youngsters into farming and put them into training facilities in the schools where they can work alongside with the farmers, I think that can also, if the skills transfers, that is a great opportunity to build bridges. Because it truly is that. In the past, it was, if there were three sons, the two clever ones went to university, one became a medical doctor, the other a lawyer or an accountant, and the stupid one remains in the farm. These days, farming is a science.
Yes.
It is not easy to just make a success of it anymore. So I think by the massive pool of skills that are available, and reaching out to unemployed youth in the townships, bring them on board, take them to the farm for a week, teach them a few skills, show them how to do something. It could be an interesting way of also trying to build more bridges, which is so desperately needed.
Johan Abri, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's been quite a conversation, and I think a conversation that needs to be had in more places by more people. I must say I I look back on Black Monday still with a great deal of sadness, but, you know, I guess the best way that we're going to fix it is by having these conversations across the opinion lines and begin to do something about it. But thank you, and I hope that you can begin to fly the flag for some of these very important things that need to happen within our country. I think, you know, the one insight or the reflection I had after all my anger on Monday was, yes, we're still stuck together.
Absolutely.
Black, white, yes. Black aren't going anywhere, white aren't going anywhere. We're either going to fight it out. I'm not sure if we fight long enough, if we'll get rid completely of white people or completely of black people. So we're just going to have to hug it out. And that's going to take some deep conversations, but ultimately we're stuck together, and it seems that we're delaying the inevitable if we don't get down to it and begin to understand one another and begin to share this country in a way that is responsible. But thanks a lot, Johan, and good luck with all of your efforts. That's it. I'm out of here. That's one show done without my buddy, my pal, Andrew Levy. Have yourself a lovely week, and how about you build some bridges wherever you are? Cheers.
This is CliffCentral.com.